1866. It's a two-source hologram. It must be nothing more than hologram-like. Or this could not occur. If USA 1974 were truly substantial, it could not oscillate like that. No superimposition montage could take place. These continua must be projected, and obviously by the observer, the self, but an Ur-self, the Atman, Brahman within. No other explanation is possible, to wit. Whatever reality you truly believe in is served up, including all details. Someone convinced he was in Weimar, Germany, would see the world under that aspect. These are modes of perceiving one, i.e. the same, actually unchanging thing. Viewpoints, perspectives. This Urwelt can assume or be projected upon so as to assume to us any space-time aspect imaginable. It is an omnifaceted revolving sphere of some kind reflecting back at us what we project, or what something in us, or, well, Brahman, nice to meet you, you cunning dreamer of worlds, how obliging you are, right down to minute trivia. Not only can you assume, take on, be, appear to be, any form, but all forms. I always come back to you when I push this far enough. I'm right, then, in my writing, aren't I? Silly putty universes, a whole lot of them. But underneath, it's you, obliging and smiling, any guise we wish, believe in. You have it fully made. You even fooled the Buddha, you the magician, the game player. Why the manifold disguises? The doubter and the doubt, and the hymn of total faith. Emerson was right. Note. In his poem, Brahma, end note. Tattvamasi. Here I am, one of the forms you take, writing about you, figuring out your ways. Brahman, delighting in detecting Brahman. This may be one of your favorite games, and you assist us forward, as I saw last night. Diversification into the pluriforms, the many from the one. You enlighten us, but it is you who fools us. Fools your own polyforms, Brahman the magician, James, the audience, and the palm tree savior. You are all of these, Christ included, and the woman I hear and see, holy wisdom in secret, is you. The basis of it all is a game for children which consists of a show in which the most subtle teaching takes place, as if to see if we can detect illusion. I view it all epistemologically, but it could be viewed morally or aesthetically, etc. My criterion is real versus irreal. What is actually there, and just where is it? I say it's mainly in our heads, but an inner-outer analog system exists, which locks us into world, a push-pull feedback loop, the inner projecting onto the outer, and the outer, you, Brahman, cunningly simulating each projection and generating it back in enriched synchronization, so no thinness appears. The outer is not just a mirror, but an amplifying mirror or structure. Generator. In other words, Atman within projects the bare bones of a particular aspect of world onto the omnifaceted matrix. And you as outer Brahman supply details which fill in the picture, which you generate back. You enhance, as Brahman, the reality world generator, what each Atman projects. It's like joint and the soft drink stand that turns out to be just the word soft drink stand. No, it's as if the words are initially projected. That's the first step. It starts with Atman, goes to the spinning macro Volvox. There it is enhanced, enriched, with corroborative detail, and mirrored back to Atman. It is received by Atman in its enhanced, more fully produced form, and again projected out onto the flux Volvox top. So this push-pull feedback loop just keeps on mutually generating, creating a more and more articulated hologram-like reality. But it is hologrammatic and no more. But I broke the push-pull in 274 when I saw the fish. In 374, because of my belief, I projected Rome circa AD 45, and you obligingly articulated it. In the midst of a USA 1974 hologram, a palpable absurdity. As Thomas, I may have very, totally sincerely projected the initial bare bones aspect, but I, my interior Atman, did not project all that I saw of Rome circa AD 45. You obligingly augmented the projection. With details I did not and could not know, which gave the system away, and generated that augmentation back, and the push-pull began. So we got such details as primitive Christian sacraments and the Koine, fear of the Romans, etc., and then the whole world aspect, i.e., one space, one time, system broke down, and the Dibbakaku eye opened, and I saw the unitary revolving sphere, which grows and incorporates over thousands of years. No aspect world was presented to me at that point. I saw what I call zebra, and at last, recently, recognized it as a giant brain interfaced, which utilizes us as stations, and which consists of living information. Xenophanes. Even more recently, I see the brain as a vast phagocyte, and its enemy, the parthenogen. But that may be a graphic analogy only. What I am sure of is that Parmenides was correct. You give us not just an illusory phenomenal world, but a whole lot of them in space and time, as many as we initiate, which again is you in us initiating these worlds. You are a world creator God. You do not just think, but cause to be. The breakdown in my push-pull system in 274 temporarily set another world and another self into generation. But finally, the situation restabilized as it had been before. However, I was now in dialogue with a you and not an it. I knew that true reality was sentient, and at least partly alive and very smart, and also something of a conjurer, also very beautiful and female. If I had to make a statement about the very most ultimate nature of what I saw, I'd say it seemed to be a single, complex sphere in flux. Elaborating, yes, that's the word I want, elaborating itself out of its continually greater number of stages of antecedent states stages, always surpassing itself aesthetically in terms of wisdom, intricacy, efficiency, level of negentropy, organization, yes, perpetually surpassing itself in the level of organization, completeness, filling in the gaps by a continually better and better, i.e., wiser, more efficient, more beautiful use of its constituents and their arrangement, placement within, subsumed as parts, by the single overall unitary structure. It may indeed develop from simplicity to complexity, but at the same time, it progresses from plurality, many pieces, to incorporation into a unity. So its number is inversely proportional to its complexity. It goes from the many simple to the one absolutely complex. This reflects the distribution of elements on the periodic table. The more complex, heavier, the less frequent. Also, it resembles thought processes in a brain, as that article in Nature pointed out back in the early 50s. So it follows principles established in subsets we're familiar with. Complexity is inversely proportional to frequency. As phagocyte, it may not only be engulfing the parthenogen, but using it as a stockpile of parts. The two entities will finally become one, and the dialectic will end successfully. This certainly resembles Timaeus, Nous at work, persuading Ananke. Yes, that's it. The encircled BIP magnet parthenogen is being disassembled and incorporated into the brain phagocyte sphere, which process produces time and flux. Heraclitus. But it is not an equal contest. The sphere or brain, although facing a formidable opponent, is successfully dismantling it, although the process is not complete. It is the upper realm of Form 1 eventually making irreal the lower realm of Form 2, as Parmenides realized. Form 2, the BIP in the aspect of eternity, isn't there. It's only there in the flux-time process. The phagocyte has, like the dragon, consumed itself starting with the tail. The BIP may be its own antecedent fossil self, blind and mechanical, at an earlier level of evolution. Matter, insentient, compared to life and thought, brain. Thus the universe, the totality, organizes itself into the brain. That I saw by consuming itself, what we see as change, flux, time, process, is sign of its life. It is alive and becoming more so, just as I, as microbit, did in 374. Hologram, microbit, analogy of the whole. Finally, I ask, what is the purpose of the push-pull inner-outer analogy feedback loop between the stations and the total brain, out of which illusory, hypostatized worlds are generated? Why, this is how it elaborates and builds successive, antecedent, subsuming, more evolved stages of itself, working toward ultimate unity and complexity. Since there is nothing but it, it can only interact with its own parts. By definition, nothing, ultimately, can exist outside it, although during the temporal flux process, this is not true. It annexes, incorporates, at the expense of the not-yet-it, i.e., the not-yet-brain but still dead fossil. The push-pull process accomplishes, or is one way, the way which concerns and involves us, final unitary totality. As the push-pull takes place between a given cell, station, part, bit, or Atman, and the total brain so far, that bit is hyped up to elevated. Well, I guess for whatever, it will serve as in the final unitary being, which is probably awake, sentient throughout. It's as if an escalating thermal, or ergic charge, is generated by this mutual push-pull process. It is the brain firing through along its circuits and firing back in response. No energy escapes from the closed system circuit, so the ergic tension just builds and builds. We experience this as involvement with what we construe to be the world. It fires at us, the way it fired the pink beam of info-rich light from the fish sign on the window at me. There is a typical, not atypical example, but usually it's disguised. What I got to see at that time was the purposeful, brain-like quality of reality with me, in it, not outside it. To use an instance I know of, tears fires a certain charge of this living energy info. It goes on constantly all around us. This is why our brains crave, require, not just stimuli, but dialogue. This is the basis of life, as Martin Buber pointed out. The brain might also be said to be educating its parts so they will accurately replicate it in miniature, thus achieving for it its desired completeness, its goal, wholeness throughout. Only when the microstations precisely reflect the totality will the whole thing work, function. Our lives are exchanges of energy, information back and forth among us and with the total brain, involving us in one purpose and one outcome. It is not destiny. It is the will of the whole. There is nothing that can thwart it, because outside it, finally, nothing will remain. This is understood in Christianity as the new cosmos of the mystical Corpus Christi. 1878. Regarding the factor of complexity of the Volvox, what's involved is not the number of parts, but the interconnections. I perceived a veritable maze of connections, with each new part fitted in to link as many previous parts as possible. The organizing and arranging has this interconnectivity in mind. Information moves through this jungle gym, branching and flowing like the red mercury in a thermometer. O God, what have I stumbled onto? This is the basic cable. It's Crick and Watson's double helix again. And the ancient sign, billions of these twisting interwoven conduits. It places a linkage in place, a bar, or leg, a rigid shank, and then twists the flexible red and gold double helix filaments around it. It supports the twisting strands. It is material. They are energy. They travel along supported by the linking bar. That means our material physical world, all its constituents, becomes mere rigid supports for cables that are not substantial, which carry the messages and are the real business of the Volvox-like brain. Then the macroorganism can distribute its energy anywhere it wishes, to any station along any cable. Entropy is overruled because of this deliberate and effective capacity to transfer charge, potential, at will. This is an important matter. This lies at the heart of degentropy. I make no clear distinction between energy, information, and the life of this organism. Transfer, storage, boosting, I shift from a biological model to a circuit model. I realize, but both seem to apply. From the very start when I saw it in 374, it behaved as 1. Electricity and 2. Alive. What I defined as set to ground could also be termed signal to noise, since entropy, disorder, enters into information theory. In 374, it could be said I was able to extract message or order out of apparent disorder, i.e., perceive a negentropy normally outside our percept system. What seemed to define signal was certain frequencies of light, wavelengths of the color spectrum. One would have to, 1, know that the signal was on that particular frequency, and 2, be able to unscramble the frequency from all others received. This happened to me outside my volition. Ability to distinguish color frequencies more and more accurately, precisely, seems to be an evolving faculty in humans. On specific red frequencies, the information formed messages intelligible to me, geometric forms marked with Greek letters. Also, the living, sentient plasma I call zebra was on that red frequency. In referring to my reference books, I find that the red I saw as set or signal is at the most extreme high end of the visible spectrum. I take it, therefore, that the band of color visible to me had become increased, perhaps into the infrared. It looked like overamped, valent red phosphors in the tube gun, cathode tube of a TV set. Reds, too, had predominated in the phosphine activity. The infrared end is long waves. Interestingly, they are heat, i.e., thermal. Voice. There is something or someone else living inside my head, and he is not living in this century. Because the Holy Spirit was a living being for him, it is for me. 1881. So again, we seem to have two mutually exclusive true propositions. A. Thomas is a former life of mine, of me, and I was Thomas. B. Thomas is someone else inside my head, i.e., other than me, and he is right now not living in this century. A equates with my anamnesis in 274 upon seeing the golden fish sign. I remembered I was am in Rome circa AD 45, ergo, Thomas is me, but B, Thomas talks to me, and he thinks in the koine, which I don't know, ergo, he is not me. And if, as it appears, he is in my head but not living in this century, then time is a fucking illusion and not linear at all. I point at once to my omnifaceted, omni-world-generating sphere with its push-pull engagement with all the psychoi. I'd say I possess, just in this alone, knowledge such as few humans have ever had, and experiences to match. Perhaps my onion model of time is absolutely correct. Thomas locks into one layer, I another. Again, ubik. Thomas, locked into Rome, circa AD 45, is still alive, and not just alive, but in my head, my head. Am I likewise in his head? Or is this just one head? Fuck. Beyond doubt, Thomas and I are co-inhabitants of my head, i.e., brain or mind, probably brain, existing side by side, somewhat, but not entirely partitioned off from each other. I say not entirely because, one, in hypnagogic states, I can transliminate him, or he can transliminate, and, two, in 2374, he first broke through, in 274, and in 374, he virtually took over. He did take over. And three, in crisis, he can speak to me. I guess when my ego begins to implode, which fits in with two. Okay, multiple personalities. Great, fine. The literature is full of these cases. But with him living in another century? How can he be living in another century when my head, brain, and body are here? I must cite my omni-world-generating push-pull action sphere. I have no other theory. But if my shoulder dislocates, does his shoulder dislocate? When I saw Rome circa AD 45, his world, it did equate with, prove syntonic to, mine. People who I saw were simultaneously Americans and Romans. USA 1974 and Rome circa AD 45 seemed to be mere aspects of one substrate, the matrix sphere. Obviously, the many plural space-times are aspects projected onto and or by from the matrix, which is totally open or plastic, capable of seeming to be any place and any time. Brahman. 1884. I state, the passage of time since Acts is spurious. That is it. That is the premise derived from empirical experience. Whatever our senses tell us means nothing. Circular time, not linear time, is involved. When Santa Sophia, Christ, returns, it will be in apostolic times as promised. The 1900 intervening years are a spurious interpolation by the BIP. This is why I, Thomas, constantly write in indictment of the substantiality of our reality. There is a one-to-one correspondence between, one, the spuriousness of our world, and two, my writing about this, including writing about falsified memories. It has been my job to indict our world as spurious, and I have done it, obsessively, constantly, and continuously. I have shown how it can be that such is so. I have examined mechanism after mechanism, model after model. In tears, I set out to depict what really does exist, and I did so without my knowing it, so obviously Thomas wrote it. I depicted the world of Acts. It all dovetails. QED, the content of tears, is the proof of all the above. Under epistemological attack, the world of Acts stands as being. The rest dissolves as mere accretional shifting aspects. 1886. What a realization! Transtemporal constant secret Christians, originating in apostolic times and lying within humans in succeeding generations, reactivated by external disinhibiting stimuli. But before this or without this can covertly direct the persons they inhabit, like the way Thomas secretly masterminded my writing. Hot dog! But this is exactly what I'm not supposed to talk about. These underlying, cohabitating, secretly still living apostolic Christians want to stay secret. Thomas is only one of several, or many, I guess. What I am just beginning to realize is that Thomas has, for at least 27 years, masterminded my writing and its themes, if not my whole life. This should not be publicly disclosed, for obvious reasons. He took over in 374 to save me, and I should not write about it. I've been told. It is counterproductive. What I must concentrate on is not the irreality of our world or worlds, plural, but the absolute transtemporal constant, the apostolic secret Christians still alive and at work. This fits in with my flash upon seeing the golden fish sign. I saw the secret early Christians hurrying about their business. Then the answer is, Thomas is not a former life of mine. I did not live once in Rome circa AD 45. Thomas is an immortal apostolic Christian, and Rome circa AD 45 is the real present world. Note. Dick was in many ways a genius and a visionary, but this Rome business is just stone screwy. In Valis, which has the good sense to pretend it might be fiction, an alternate reality Rome can be accepted as an imaginative conceit. Here it raises the obvious question. Did Dick really believe this? Or is he half-consciously assuming a guise of madness, not so much for the sake of the reader as for his own sake, so as to get, a la the most romantic 19th century notions of madness, at some truth? S.E. End note. And Thomas co-inhabits my head, locked into the real world. Acts is not a past world, tears. It is the noumenal matrix of this world. We are not dealing with either the past or a past life and personality, but the Urwelt lying under the Dokos. Thomas and his world is here and now, and he knows it. So I am, so to speak, a front, a face, for an immortal, transtemporal, secret early Christian who is operating, undoubtedly in conjunction with others like him, in contemporary history. This is behind-the-scenes stuff, thrilling and scary. I certainly see Thomas's hand or mind in my writing. Yes, indeed. He is with me, not is me, in my head, but living in another century. I have even experienced the post-mortem world through Thomas. My 374 experience was all I thought it was, bright white light shining in the night to guide your way.